In Defense of Ambition. Ambition is a one-word psychological test. Define it, and you instantly reveal a great deal about yourself. Even the most neutral of works, like the dictionary, gives itself away, defining ambition first and foremost as a passion for rank, fame, or power. Passion immediately assumes a heat that goes beyond good sense and stability. And rank, fame, and power have come under fairly heavy criticism for at least a century. One can, after all, be ambitious for the public good, for the easing of suffering, for the improvement of mankind, though there are some who say that these are exactly the type of ambitious people most to be distrusted. Surely ambition is behind dreams of glory, of wealth, of love, of distinction, of achievement, of pleasure, of goodness. What life does with our dreams and expectations cannot, of course, be predicted. Some dreams, begun in self-sacrifice and in spite. Other dreams, begun in selfishness and in charity. Our inability to predict the outcome of dreams is no reason to cease dreaming. To be sure, ambition with no larger purpose than merely climbing up is never a pretty prospect to consider. As drunks have done to alcohol, the single-minded have done to ambition, given it a bad name. Like a taste for alcohol, ambition, too, creates a thirst that is not always easy to satisfy. Some people cannot handle it, and it has brought trouble to others, not merely the ambitious alone. Still, none of this seems sufficient cause for driving ambition under the counter. What is the worst that can be said, that has been said, about ambition? Here is a, surely, partial list. To begin with, it, ambition, is often antisocial, and indeed is now out of date, belonging to any age when individual action was more valued and useful than it is today. Individual action and ambition are firmly linked. A person controlled by ambition ignores the group. Apart from others, he is on his own and out for his own. The ambitious man or woman sees the world as a battle. Aggressiveness is his or her principal emotion. The world has limited prizes to offer, and he or she is determined to get his or hers. The truly ambitious believe that it is a dog-eat-dog world, and they are distinguished by wanting to be the dogs that do the eating. From here, it is easy to believe that those who have achieved the common goals of ambition, money, fame, power, have achieved them through foul deeds of a greater or lesser degree, mostly a greater. Thus, all politicians in high places thought to be ambitious are understood to be without moral values. How could they have such moral values and still have risen so high? If ambition is to be well regarded, the rewards of ambition, wealth, distinction, control over one's fate, must be deemed worthy of the sacrifices made on ambition's behalf. If the tradition of ambition is to be vigorous, it must be widely shared. It especially must be esteemed by people who are themselves admired, the educated not least among them. The educated not least because, nowadays, more than ever before, it is they who have seized the platforms of public discussion and used the power of the spoken and written word in newspapers, in magazines, and on television. In an odd way, it is the educated who have claimed to have given up on ambition as an ideal. What is odd is that they have perhaps most benefited from ambition, if not always their own, than that of their parents and grandparents. The attacks on ambition are many and come from various angles. Its public defenders are few and unimpressive, where they are not extremely unattractive. Many people are naturally skeptical of ambition, feeling that it represents something troublesome in human nature. But going at things the other way, sacrificing ambition so as to guard against its potential excesses, is to go at things wrongly. To discourage ambition is to discourage dreams of greatness. All men and women are born, live, suffer, and die. What distinguishes us from one another is our dreams, whether they be dreams about material or spiritual things, and what we do to make them come about. It may seem an exaggeration to say that ambition is at the center of society, holding many of its separate elements together, but it is not an exaggeration by much. Remove ambition, and the essential elements of society seem to fly apart. Ambition implies work and discipline to achieve goals, personal and social, of a kind society cannot survive without. Ambition is intimately connected with family, for men and women not only work partly for their families. Husbands and wives are often ambitious for each other, and harbor some of their strongest ambitions for their children. To have children is nearly an expression of ambition in itself. Finally, though ambition once primarily belonged to kings, it has, in more recent times, increasingly been found among the middle classes. Working, saving, and planning. These, the daily aspects of ambition, have always been the distinguishing marks of a rising middle class. The attack against ambition is really an attack on the middle class and what it stands for. Like it or not, the middle class has done much of society's work in America, and it, the middle class, has from the beginning run on ambition. It is not difficult to imagine a world without ambition. It would probably be a kinder world, without demands, without conflicts, without disappointments. People would have time for reflection. Such work as they did would not be for themselves but for the group. Competition would never enter in. Conflict would be eliminated. Tension become a thing of the past. Longevity would be increased, for fewer people would die of heart attacks or strokes caused by aggressive endeavor. Anxiety would be dead. Time would stretch on and on, with ambition long departed from the human heart. And how boring life would be.